This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I am Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven, a smiling, very hairy Ben Raven. It is the divisional round of the playoffs. We're not keeping up on hygiene. It is a whirlwind in the Lions universe right now. Ben, how are you feeling coming off of Lions-Rams and heading into the big matchup on Sunday against the Buccaneers?
Very excited, man. Very excited, but also very, very tired. These primetime games are taking years off of my life. I tweeted the other day that I'm nearly guaranteed not to see 50 because of this season, but I'm absolutely loving the ride, man. It's like a brand new job. It's just, I mean, it's playoff football, man. This is what I dreamed of doing. This is like what led me into this career path. So for as crazy as storyline driven as last week was, just still having a hard time gripping reality that the Lions are still alive. The Lions are one win away from the NFC title game. It's just whole new world.
I'm also having some issues coming to terms with it and really wrapping my arms around what this moment means. I mean, I'm not used to seeing people, grown men, weeping in the stands at Ford Field. Seeing Jared Goff's car just swarmed by people, shouting King of Detroit at him. I mean, this town has come alive. I live here in Detroit, and anywhere you go, everywhere you go, you feel it. I'm having some issues with it. One man who's not is Dan Miller, voice of the Lions, does a fabulous job. And I'm very excited, Ben, to have him on the episode this week, because no one, you know, authors the voice of the Lions and what this moment means more than Dan Miller, and we'll get to that in a bit. That game the other night, though, like, I'm still like, just the chance for Jared Goff, you know, the coming out on fire, the plays down the stretch, the pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, just having the stones to throw the ball in that moment when the bricks are rattling out of the foundation at Ford Field, and you're like, yeah, Jared Goff, go throw a pass and win us the game. I mean, it was just a special night, and it's something that we won't forget. It's something that no one in that building will ever forget, as Dan Campbell said this week. And I think it's something that many, many Detroiters will never forget.
No, absolutely. I mean, and Dan Miller does a great job. You can tell he's really gotten a feel and really gotten to know Jared Goff. And he does a really good job at explaining what last week in his mind thinks he meant for Jared Goff. And I think that's really important for a guy who has found a home in Detroit, who has found a home in a place that believes him, has found a fan base that is like not afraid. They got a franchise icon taking the field, and they're like, no, F that. That number 16 dude is the guy that got us here. So it's just fascinating. He balled out. Another ribbon for the offensive line too. Goff was 22 of 22 when the line was kept clean. This team trusts their offensive line. This team trusts their quarterback, and they went out and won that game, man. And we got another game to cover.
We've talked so much about Jared Goff. We've talked so much about Amon-Ra St. Brown. We've talked so much about so many guys. I don't think we've talked enough about how much the offensive line pounded their ass on Sunday night. I mean, they've really, like, how many times did we hear Aaron Donald's name? That guy is a, forget generational talent, he's an all-time talent. And the last time the Lions played him, he broke the game. He broke Frank Ragnow in a way I've rarely seen. Yeah. I think he had three pressures the whole night. One was only really meaningful at all. And otherwise, I don't remember seeing 99 in that game at all, except for when he jumped offside.
No, absolutely. I mean, in my PFF kind of analysis, breaking down the grades, it was like, why were they so hard on Frank Ragnow, Jonah Jackson, and Graham Glasgow? Because like, Aaron Donald and Kobe Turner were like nullified, man. Those first two of those three first scoring drives for the Lions, man. Run behind Penei Sewell and good things will happen to you. I mean, seriously, I feel you. This offensive line deserves a ton of the roses. And I still smile every time I think that you gave the MVP award to Penei Sewell, because I'm like, God damn it, I wanted to do that. That was a good idea. So I just absolutely all the love for the offensive line, warranted, deserved, all that stuff.
Well, as we look forward, because there is another game to be played, the Lions host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the team they beat 20-6 back in October. Both teams are pretty different at this point. The Bucs have won 6 out of 7. The Lions have a whole bunch of guys back who did not play in that game. Jahmyr Gibbs was not uniformed. Brian Branch, C.D. Deuce, and David Montgomery left the game in the first half. So, I mean, you saw guys like Craig Reynolds playing big roles in that game against the Bucs. It's going to be a very different Lions team that they see on Sunday, and obviously a very different crowd with the game being at Ford Field. We'll get to Dan in a second, but Ben, before we do that, Ben, I wanted to get your thoughts on this game going into Sunday. And I guess your pick, we haven't even talked about it yet, so I'm going to put you back on the spot. We did that last week. We both picked Lions wins and didn't feel super great about it. We talked about it off air. Like, oh crap, what did we just do? And of course the Lions won the game, making us look brilliant. But what are your thoughts going into Sunday?
You know, for all the reasons you lay out in this podcast, I'm picking the Detroit Lions. Yes, the Buccaneers are a better team. Yes, their defense is clicking. Yes, they match up very well with the Lions on paper. But this is a different Detroit Lions team, too. And I think we saw what a true home field advantage means last week. And I think we'll get that, if not even more, this weekend. So I'm picking the Lions 2-0 against their old NFC Central rivals.
Yeah, I'm also taking the Lions. And you mentioned the crowd noise. I mean, it's not just a matter of making life difficult or communication difficult. You know, and there were some procedural things with the Rams in that game. You saw it manifest. But it had a real effect on the game when they drew out 2 timeouts in the second half early on, late in the play clock, on third down, I believe. And McVay called timeout and did it again. And that proved to be a huge difference, because when the Lions got the ball back with 4 minutes left, the Rams only had one shot to stop the clock. And the Lions only needed 2 first downs, it turned out, to win that game. And it's going to be shaking, I guarantee you, again on Sunday night with a chance to go to the NFC Championship game. I also think, like, the Bucs are better than they were in October, but they're not as good as the Rams. Baker Mayfield isn't in the same universe as Matthew Stafford. They have a terrific run defense, and that can make things difficult for a Lions rushing game that hasn't played its best football, I would say, in the last 3 or 4 weeks. But Jared Goff threw for more yards against Tampa than any other team this year. He's got more weapons now. J-Mo is a different guy right now than he was back then. And J-Mo still hit him for a 45-yard touchdown in that game. Laporta is hit full stride. The offensive line is mashing. Everyone's healthy besides Laporta, and Laporta has another week to get healthy. And the Lions defense is probably where they've made the most progress. My big concern, Ben, is the defensive perimeter. We've talked about that quite a bit, and they keep getting hit there, so we'll keep talking about it. Puka went off. Cam Sutton, Kendall Vildor, both had got, you know, they got beat for long ones, long touchdowns against LA. So that's something to shore up. And I will say, Ben, they were much better in the second half against LA. Allowed 6 points. It's like I wrote last week. I feel like the Lions are a team of destiny, and that's not going to get you a win, but it gives you a hell of a lot of energy, vibes. Like, we saw the pinpoint tightness of the offense in that game, in particular Jared Goff, and he's going to be back in front of a crowd singing his name. I just don't see Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Bucs winning this game.
No, and I don't. And the one thing that really sticks out to me is the Bucs are not going to be able to run on the Lions. This Detroit defense, the one thing that's been consistently better every step of the way this year has been their ground game against running backs. And I mean, they flashed it against this team the first time around. You take away that running game, I mean, Rashad White, talented guy, talented dual threat guy, but the Lions are going to eat that rushing attack alive. And it's going to have to be Baker Mayfield, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Trey Palmer, Kate Otten to beat them. I mean, we saw it come close back in October. Mike Evans nearly had himself a full length of the field touchdown. So one or two of those go the Bucs' way, that's a different game. But I mean, that the Detroit defense is better than it was in that game. And that was one of their best pass coverage games of the season, mind you, a couple of those windows. But like, yeah, take away that running game, make Baker beat you. This should be a win for the Lions. I feel confident in that Lions pick this week.
It's going to be a great game next week. Last week was a historic, I think is the word. No one's going to forget what we saw, what we heard. And so with that, Ben, let's get to Dan Miller, our chat with him, relive some of the magic of Lions Rams, and with a little bit of a look ahead to what awaits on Sunday. All right, Ben, I'm ecstatic about the guy we're bringing in right now. Longtime friend of the DOD program, Dan Miller, voice of the Lions. Dan, thank you very, very much for making time in a chaotic week for all of us.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is fun, right? If we weren't doing this, we would wish we were doing this. We've watched the other people do it, so now we get to have some fun and play for a while.
Absolutely.
This year, Dan, I've learned what it's like to cover primetime games. You know, that's not really a thing we've had to worry about. And it's something I've kind of adjusted to, although the other night was crazy. It was something else. And now it's like covering the playoffs. Like, oh man, this stuff comes at you fast.
It does. And you're right. You kind of get in. The thing I tell people always say, oh man, you got two jobs. You must be so busy. The beautiful thing about the NFL is it's kind of the same thing every week. You kind of have this. Well, that went out the window this year with the Thursday games and the night games and all that stuff. So it kind of felt like it was more chaotic throughout the season than when you play every game at 1 o'clock and you know exactly where you're going to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, depending upon if you're traveling or not. And there's a rhythm to it. This year, man, there was no rhythm to it. It was just different. But that's being good. That's having a team that people want to see, and it beats the heck out of, you know, where we've seen this team for so long when it was just like, okay, you go over and play at 1 o'clock, we'll get back to you.
There were some seasons where I thought, you know, in December I was writing into the ether, you know, it's like, who even up there reading this stuff? And now I open up my email and I got people hitting me up about, hey, are they going to clean the drapes before the game on Sunday night?
And you know, that's a great point, Kyle. And that's the one thing that people don't understand when they come to us and they say, man, it must be really tough when they're losing to deal with those games and stuff. It's not the games. The game is a story unto itself. And just, you know, you have something to write about a game and a game story. I describe what's happening in front of me. It's everything during the week when the players are angry, the coaches are angry, nobody's in a good mood, nobody wants to have fun. There's no such thing as like a sidebar fun story because they're losing and their life is miserable. But, you know, when you're winning, everything opens up a little bit more, but there's definitely two sides to it. And you see this side of it and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, no doubt. Dan Miller, voice of the Detroit Lions, joining Graham Glasgow at the top of the leaderboard in DOD appearances. You're tied for first with Graham, no doubt. And I know how it's changed for us, but like, how has your daily routine? Like, what do you do when it's a night game during the day before we get into the meat and potatoes of this conversation? Like, how has that changed for you, Dan?
The night game, mostly I just sit around and think I'm just going to leave now. And it's like, I say, I'll tell myself, okay, I'm going to leave at 4. And then I end up leaving at 3. It's just like, you're grinding. You just can't wait to get there. You can't wait to get going. And I got there early for that playoff game. And I was just sitting around. I just said, you know what? I'm just going to go. I'll just watch the earlier game at the stadium and that'll be fine. And look, it's just nervous energy. I mean, it's just, you know, all your prep work is done and you just want to get there and put everything in order and make sure you're ready to go. And it's great. And I mean, look, it was that way in Kansas City to open the season when you're just like, let's get there, let's get this thing going. And it was that way in Green Bay on week 4 on the night game. So it's an understanding of what's about to unfold in front of you. And obviously that, you know, goes up exponentially when it's a playoff game, but it's all good stuff. It's all being done for the right reasons because this team is playing well and what they're doing matters now.
Dan, you've been around a long time. You've seen the depths of this organization. And I think in many regards, that makes you the perfect guy to author some of these moments we're seeing now. And you had some great calls the other night against LA, and I'm excited to get into some of those with you and hear about your reaction to those. But before we dive into that, I guess on a broader scale, what was Sunday night like for you, calling that game, seeing that moment, seeing the people crying in the stands? I mean, you had such an unbelievable call. You did such a great job contextualizing everything in real time. I guess what was that night like for you?
One, I appreciate the kind words. Thank you. It was, look, I really, Let me take it back a week. I dreaded that storyline of the Rams coming in because I knew what it would become. I knew it would just become Stafford, Goff, Goff, Stafford, Stafford, Goff, Goff. And it was just, I knew what it would be. And I do believe that that kind of fed on itself and it became almost a fever pitch. And, you know, it became, well, how are they going to greet Stafford? But Goff's our guy. And then all of a sudden that manifests itself in the Jared Goff chants before the game, which was just unbelievable. And then as the game approached, they said, they're going to boo the heck out of Stafford. And they did. And it wasn't because people in that stadium dislike Matthew. I think everybody in Detroit respects him and appreciates what he did here. I mean, they understood when he walked out the door and they rooted for him, many of them, when he won a Super Bowl. But on that night, in this circumstance, he was on the other side. And that's all that was. That booing was not tonight, man. Not tonight. This is not the night to feel warm and fuzzy. But what was it? Kyle, it was nerve-wracking because I knew how big this was for this organization, for Jared Goff, and what this night could represent. And I wanted it so bad for these fans. And I'll be honest, I wanted it so bad for Jared. And I've never... Look, I'm not like a lot of you guys in the media. I am rooting for this team. I will wear that on my sleeve. There's no doubt about that. But watching that game unfold, it was every emotion that you could possibly have. It was amazing at the beginning, watching them march down the field three straight times and score. And then, you know, the Rams are coming back and then the Rams have it late. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, a field goal might be the difference here. Then the Lions get it back with 4:07 to go. And you're thinking, man, just run out the clock. And then we got to that 2-minute warning. And they went to a break and I'm turning everybody in the booth. I said, if we get a first down, it's over, right? They have one timeout. So we're doing math and I'm just figuring out exactly because I don't want to blow this call and say it's over. And then all of a sudden I'm saying, well, they're punting to the Rams with 12 seconds left now. So there was a lot going on in that moment, but you know, it was to see it end like that was incredible and it was fitting. It was Dan Campbell doing what some coaches might not have done on 2nd and 9. It was Jared Goff delivering against his former team. It was Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's an absolute superstar, making a catch and diving for the first down when the team absolutely needed it the most. So there was so much involved in those final minutes that just made sense for what this team has become and where this team is right now.
We all knew that the bricks are going to rattle out of that place. I mean, we've heard it loud before for big games. This is the biggest of them all. I think we were kind of prepared for the frenzied atmosphere that we saw, that we heard. I mean, my ears were splitting at the end of that game. But the thing that stood out to me was Goff wasn't even on the field yet. They showed him on the video board walking out of down the tunnel that's inside the stadium. And all you hear is Jared Goff, Jared Goff. And it's unbelievable. That guy... number one pick, you know, went to a Super Bowl, like, you know, it's had an outstanding career at multiple levels. And he said he had never had something like that before. And it was happening before he was even on the field. And then, you know, when that was happening, they show, you know, Stafford running out onto the field and they switch to boos. And then Goff takes the field and they switch back to chants of Goff and they chant him at the coin flip. And after they scored the first touchdown, they chant him again, running back on the field. It was that kind of night. There's people literally crying in the stands. I mean, it was just a crazy atmosphere. But the crescendo for me was that final sequence in the game when he hits Amon-Ra to ice it. And then had the three kneel downs. I mean, it must have been the most dramatic three kneel downs in NFL history. And I thought it was really interesting, Dan, that you... Well, first of all, let's listen to Dan's call. And then I want to ask you about the call.
Here we go. Goff works out of the gun. 2nd down and 9. 2 minutes to go. There's Goff back, looking, throws. It is caught. Amon-Ra St. Brown. First down. That's going to do it. Jared Goff delivers against his former team. Now all they have to do is take a knee 3 times, and this game will be over. For the second time since 1957, for the first time since January 5th, 1992, these Detroit Lions are going to win a playoff game.
154, thank you.
Damn. Oh, my God.
Detroit, stand up. You've waited for this. One proud nation, stand up. You've waited for this.
30 some odd years. My goodness. My goodness.
Sheila Hamm.
Yes.
Rod Wood.
Yes.
Mike Disner.
Yes.
Chris Spielman.
Yes.
Brad Holmes.
Yes.
Dan Campbell.
Oh, my God.
They have brought it back to Detroit. They've given it to us.
Man,
let's get in victory formation, boys. 1:54 to go. Clock will start on the snap. There's the snap. There's the knee. That's one. You stand up, Jared. Put those arms in the air. Put those arms in the air, 16. Damn. Jared Goff, 22 out of 27. 277 yards. A touchdown. Quarterback rating, 121.8. That's a winning effort. Clock moving down to 129. The Lions will milk it.
And just think, we've been carrying this round for 30-some years. We're about to get that proverbial monkey off our back.
Jared will wait to move in behind center until that clock goes all the way down. Play clock at one, takes the snap,
yes,
takes the knee. One more time. One more time, Jared. Oh, Ford Field, you are beautiful. 65,000 strong standing. One final time, Jared. One final time. Moves in behind center. Takes the snap. Takes the knee. This game is over. Oh, the Detroit Lions have won it. Celebrate, boys. Celebrate. You're coming right back here next week.
Dan, that's just fabulous stuff in the moment. And what I thought was really interesting was that even Jared Goff in the moment said when he completed that pass to Amon-Ra that he didn't know that clinched the game. He hadn't done the math yet. It wasn't until they sent the victory formation personnel onto the field. He's like, oh, I guess this is one. And the TV guys, it was the same. They didn't realize it either. I'm curious your thoughts on the call, that moment, what's going through your head at just standing up, making it. And then I guess, how did you know that the game was over at that point? Because you seemed to be ahead of everyone else.
Well, if Jared had been in our booth and seen me running around doing math, I could have helped him. But believe me, I had to do it at the same time. And I just sat there and I thought to myself, okay, it's second down and nine. If they get a first down, they'll call timeout. Let's say there's a minute 55 left or whatever. They have no timeouts left. You run a first down, play 40. You run a second down, play 40. You run a third down, play 40. That's 2 minutes. The game's over. So just doing the math, and believe me, double-checking, triple-checking during the commercial, I knew that that first down was it. And it was just – TJ was on the broadcast, as was Lomas, saying, throw the ball. Throw the ball. Go for it right now. Because if you just kind of run it in the line of scrimmage on second down, run it in the line of scrimmage on third down, you don't get it. You're punting with about a minute 10. And I don't think we want to give the ball to Matthew Stafford with a minute 10 to go, needing a field goal to win. So it was Dan Campbell doing what Dan Campbell does and you know, rolling the dice a little bit, but trusting his guys. And I will add this, guys. I honestly believe this, that the Dan Campbell we see making that decision and the Dan Campbell we see making other decisions is born out of that first game in Minnesota last year when he didn't trust his guys to end the game on fourth and four and came to the locker room with tears in his eyes and to the podium and said, that's on me. I've got to learn from this. And since then, sometimes maybe too far, he has trusted his guys to win games. And I think that shaped his decision. So it was an incredible moment. It was everything that we've waited for. And to be clear, it's one playoff win. It's just one. Other teams do that every year, but that hasn't happened here. And it's a step they had to take because you can't ultimately get where they want to go without taking that step. So it was important. And I didn't think there was any reason to play that down. Like, you know, other teams do this all the time. And same thing with the division title. And it's just so important for this regime, this program. If they had lost that game, could have rationalized it and said, man, they had a good season. They took some really good steps this year. Won a division, got a home playoff game. Now next year, you got to take it a step further. But man, that would have just not been complete. It's still not because there's so much left out there for them. But it is huge to have this and say they did it, because it's such a big step for this regime.
No, I'm glad you said that because I haven't felt that way either. I think that everything has been properly celebrated this year because it does mean something. That division title meant something. Getting that game in the first place meant something. I mean, shoot, Dan, your broadcast partner was a starter on that offensive line the last time they won a playoff game. And I'm just, and it was just such a night. I mean, I can imagine that's like a weird feeling for you. Like, man, this guy was out there the last time they won a playoff game. But like me, it was like an out-of-body experience at times, thinking about stuff like that and then watching Matthew Stafford throw for 370 yards, get hurt a couple of times and come back in. It just was like, we talked about it last week with a great guest, Jordan Rodrigue, like football poetry at its best right there. I mean, was that just not like an out of body experience, man? And I'm just curious what it's been like sharing it with Lomas too, on top of that. And just like that really puts a face on how long it's been.
Yeah. And let me say this, Ben, it would have been brutal to lose that game to Matthew Stafford. That's nothing against Matthew, but it would have felt like such a Lions type of thing to have that former quarterback you traded away come back and knock you out in your special season, in that season where you took that big step. And that's just, maybe people disagree with that, but I'm just telling you, that's how I felt. And the Lions are breaking all those old three-letter words. And now I think that they have broken, you know, pretty much everything that would have. They had every chance in the world to lose that game, and they found a way to win that game. And the old three-letter Lions would have found a way to lose that game. And like I said, it would have, in my mind, it would have been horrible to lose that game to Matthew Stafford because of everything involved. And further, I think it would have been terrible for Jared Goff to lose that game. And I said this to him, and if he lost that game, that hole gets a little bit bigger of dealing with being traded, being sent out of town, watching them win a Super Bowl, coming here, the journey, the losing and getting to this point, and then they knock you back again. But winning that game, honestly, guys, I think Jared Goff wakes up that next day or that night even and just feels like, you know what? There's closure. I can put that chapter behind me now. And I just think it was so important for him to get this done. And again, that's nothing against Matthew. Everybody wants to perceive it as you're saying something negative. I'm not. I'm just telling you raw facts and what I believed about this franchise, their journey, where they needed to go, and what was important. So yeah, it was big. And as far as Lomas is concerned, look, man, nobody wanted them to win more than Lomas. He's sick of being on the last team that won a playoff game. He loves this organization. He sits there and rides the ups and downs with me every single week. And TJ grew up a Lions fan here in Detroit. This meant something to him too. He came into the booth and we're just screaming and he picks me up in a bear hug and lifts me off the ground. I heard a rib crack and I thought this might not be good because that dude is still really strong. But it was just, I'm telling you, there was celebration up there. It was wonderful. It was a really, you know, the scene that played out in the stands, it played out in our booth too, because we were just so happy for these guys.
I think it was particularly cleansing, maybe is the word I'm searching for, to do it against Matthew Stafford too. I mean, everything you're saying is true, Dan. You know, getting the division title, getting the home playoff game, all these firsts out of the way. At some point, they no longer become firsts, and it's just what you're doing. It's just like any other town. Any other town, like you said, like, you know, it, like, you're not celebrating a wild card win and crying in the stands and surrounding Jared Goff's car and coronating him as the king of Detroit after a wild card win. But when you've gone this long and been so bereft of any kind of tangible success you can put your hands on, these things are celebrated. But to do it against Matthew, it takes it to a different level. Like to see the man that was so good in this town and so embodied everything you were about in terms of his toughness, his doggedness, his commitment to team, all that kind of stuff. I mean, he was tremendous in Detroit, but they didn't build enough around him repeatedly. He became the face of another failed regime, fair or not. And to have him come in here with a really good team and to take him out was particularly cleansing for this team. I thought it was so big, that 4-minute drive from Goff in the offense to keep him on the sideline. Because how many times have we seen Matthew Stafford all over this country and particular in that building come back and beat somebody? We saw it in the playoffs 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. That guy is so good. And for Goff to go out there with Stafford standing on the sideline, nursing battered ribs and a battered hand and a battered head. And hey, like most, I think most coaches are running the football in those situations. And to go out there passing to win the game, to take them out. You're going out to win, not to not lose. It made all the difference in clinching this thing.
Yeah, and maybe the guy that needed it most delivered the football, and he did it, and he won the game, and it was big. And you know, as far as what we're talking about making this big and making this, you know, division title, which teams win all the time, and one playoff game, which teams do win all the time, making something out of it. I go back to this, and I apologize if I've said this to you before, but it's really one of the kind of most memorable moments I've had covering this team. It was 2011 when they beat the Chargers to get into the playoffs, and Jim Schwartz sent his guys back on the field to thank the fans, run around the stadium, blah, blah, blah. And afterwards he said, there will come a time here where we won't celebrate making the playoffs, but that time is not today. And I thought, what an amazing understanding of that moment Jim Schwartz had. And I will never forget that. And I feel the same way about this. There will come a time we'll celebrate division titles, but maybe it won't be quite the celebration we had this time. There'll come a time where we will still, you better believe, celebrate playoff wins, but maybe it won't resonate like this one did, and it won't hit as deep as this one did, because you start not counting two since 1957, and you get to the point where you don't count playoff wins, you count playoff runs, because that's what good teams do. And that's where ultimately this program wants to be. But you can't get there without checking off these boxes, which they're doing one by one this season.
And there's one more home playoff game at least up next, man. Who knew? Exactly. Who knew? But I'm curious. You're pretty tuned into the team, the fan base and stuff like that. No chance of a letdown in that crowd, right? Like the balloon, the air is not out of that balloon, right? I know, right? It's going to be like, I've gotten a couple emails like that. Oh, I'm worried like we're celebrating this one too much. And we just talked about that. And I'm just like, I don't think so, man. So, I mean, I think it's got a chance to be even freaking louder with a chance to go to the NFC title game on the line.
Yeah, man, they've waited too long. I mean, look, it's a fair question. And I've gotten that question even about the team, because you have to very quickly shift from being a team that won a playoff game. And look, they understand what that means in Detroit. And there's a sense of accomplishment that you have from doing it. But you have to rid yourself of that and very quickly realize, as Dan Campbell says, what the opportunity is that you have in front of you. And I think these fans get that. I think these players get that. You guys are out there all the time. You understand this, and I firmly believe it. Maybe one of Dan Campbell's greatest strengths is his ability to set the tone for his team, his ability to make sure his team is ready to go. You know, they bounce back from losses. They handle wins and things like that. And I think he will have them ready to go. And I have no doubt, you know, the fans have five less hours to get lubed up for this game than they did the last game. But knowing most of those fans, I think they'll figure out a way to catch up. You know, these guys won't come in shorthanded. Tank won't be empty when they get in there.
This team definitely takes after Dan Campbell. The word, of course, that gets attached to him more than any other is grit. But when I watch this team play, I mean, they have grit, but the word that comes to my mind is fearlessness. And maybe there's some overlap, but like, this guy fears nothing. He goes for more fake punts than anyone else in the league. He goes for it on fourth down more than anyone else in the league. Guys love playing that style of football. They feel the confidence in Dan Campbell that they'll execute. They have an aggressive mindset when they play the game. I think it all works together and is part of the DNA of this rebuild. And, you know, for as much as we've talked about the end of that game against LA, and rightfully so, I think one of the underappreciated storylines of this game was going for it on fourth down in the first half from the 2 yard line or from the 3 yard line. And that pass to Sam LaPorta, again, taking to the air and trusting your guys. I think Dan Campbell understood what was on the other sideline in that game, that this was going to be a touchdown fight and he wasn't going to go for a field goal. And it paid off with a touchdown pass to LaPorta. Dan, I want to go to your call right now, and then I want to hear your reaction to the moment not on the other side.
Goff's going to work out of the gun. He's got Montgomery to his right on fourth down at about a yard and a half. Shotgun snap. Goff back. Goff looks. Goff pumps. Now throws. End zone. Yes. Caught. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Sam LaPorta. He's back, he's playing, and he's in the end zone. Dan Campbell rolls the dice. Jared Goff pays it off with a dart to 87.
Dan, what's going through your mind in that moment, that call, the guts there from Dan Campbell?
You know, I said he rolled the dice and found Laporta, and just, you know, that moment with all the concern about Laporta the week before and seeing him in there and catching that touchdown pass, it was magical. And you knew that every possession in this game, in particular early, was critical. And Dan Campbell rolling the dice there, that's what he does, but it's not without its fair share of risk. And if you give the ball up there, all of a sudden that momentum swings back to the Rams because they held you down. Think of the momentum the Lions gained by just stopping them in the red zone all three times they got there. So it was critical. It's an edge of your seat moment. It is a, you know, point in the game where it can swing one way or the other. And Jared Goff delivered, and this rookie tight end is just unbelievable. And there he is doing it again, you know, on a knee that's clearly not right. And it was just fantastic. And Kyle, let me go back to something that you talked about with Dan Campbell and making fourth down calls. Don't you think Sean McVay was flying home wondering about that fourth and 14 where he punted the ball?
I thought about that on the rewatch. Yeah.
Because that Lions defense was giving up big plays. He's got a heck of a quarterback back there that I would trust to make a big play. And even if you don't get it, you're giving it to him at the 44. You're giving it back. You only have one timeout left. That surprised me a little bit. And I just wonder, in the world of talking about these decisions and rolling the dice and what coaches do and don't, man, I just wonder if he had to do it over again, he would probably hand the ball to Matthew Stafford and say, go get me, you know, fourth and 14 here, or we will trust our defense to try to get a stop here with 4 minutes to go.
I was so fiercely trying to write at the end of that game and keep up. It's not something I had an appreciation for, Dan. But when I watched back the film, that was definitely something that stood out to me, was Dan Campbell's guts to go for it on fourth down with the Laporta touchdown. That was a huge difference, obviously, in a 1-point game. Their defense was really struggling in the first half. So to get seven there, to stay ahead of the sticks, stay ahead of L.A., was huge. And then McVay was on the other side of that coin down the stretch, where he really seemed like he turtled just a little bit and didn't trust his guys. And fourth and long's not a high percentage play, but I think it's a lower percentage to punt away the football to a good quarterback with a crowd chanting his name behind him. And one timeout, exactly.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that's one that he's probably thinking about. And if I know Matthew Stafford didn't want to come off the field at that point. And look, we're big kids here. We can say it. Lions defense has given up a lot of big plays these days. Now, they put the clamps on pretty good in the second half, held them to 6 points, but they're vulnerable and they didn't stop Puka Nacua for much of that day. So again, that's look, when I saw that punting team came out, I was like, this is cool. But that's a critical moment there where maybe you can question what happened on that other sideline.
Yeah. Three field goals from inside of 30 yards too. I mean, you don't see Dan Campbell taking any of those. And I mean, that was one of the points that we hammered home on our post-game podcast, was like, man, the aggressiveness of Dan Campbell is really, I hope fans see this, because the other side of that aggressiveness is Sean McVay taking three field goals in from 30 yard lines and punting away his final chance with the ball. So just, yeah, it took a minute to get addressed, that wheeling and dealing Dan, but like, I'm fully on board with it too. I've never had so much fun covering a guy.
Yeah. And it is who he is, and it's not going anywhere. And I think that we see that. And look, I'll be honest with you. Every time they line up for a punt, I'm like, man, they can do this here. And I'm like, okay, just making sure that's Jalen right there, because I want to know who's going to get the ball, and, you know, or are they going to have Jack throw it or whatever. But it's he keeps you on your toes, man. And here's the thing. If you watch the Rams, even on those punts, they had the guys at the line. Then they had like usually four guys right behind that, plus the return. Teams are on the lookout for the Lions and what they do. So it's not just us that knows that he's going to roll the dice. It is also obviously these teams. So look, that's one that certainly paid off big time, because if you settle for three instead of seven like the Rams did, maybe things work out differently.
I'm not saying I'm calling my shot, Dan, but I will say that Jack Fox is a former high school quarterback. We've seen him throw in games before. We see him throw every day in practice, every single day, and he has not thrown a pass this year. So I'm not saying I'm calling it, but just putting it out there.
the only one he didn't complete was dropped.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
He's like 7 out of 8 in his career, and the only one was dropped. So, yeah, Jack can spin it. There's no doubt about it. But it's just man, there's so many things on tape that you really got to catch a team sleeping, because you know all week they're saying, be on guard, be ready, because these guys will come at you with something. Even the other night against Dallas, I mean, what a great play. And Dave Phipp told a great story about it. You know, the pass by Jalen to Khalil Dorsey. And Dave Phipp told us a great story when we sat down with him. He said he was in his office, and if you guys know this, I apologize, but that he was in his office one day, and he said Campbell walked in early in the morning, looked like he hadn't swept. He said hat was to the side, hair was all over the place, and he goes, hey, I got a good idea on that fake punt. And that's where that was born, was, you know, they had shown the run a couple times, and then he said, you know what, let's run up, pop that pass out there, and that's exactly what they did to Dorsey against Dallas, and it worked beautifully.
Again, because of all the high drama, I think that there's some of these decisions that go a little underappreciated out of a game like that. But even the decision by Dan Campbell to accept the holding penalty, I thought was, ballsy, given how much they were struggling with Stafford and Puka. And it's 3rd and 4. Aiden gets a good rush on Stafford. There's a holding penalty, and they could have taken the 4th down right there and forced a field goal, likely to take the lead. And instead, Dan Campbell's like, you know, F it. Like, I trust my guys. Like, let's push them back under the cusp of field goal range or out of field goal range and make them work for it. And they got the stop, and they punted away the ball, and they never touched it again.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was the right call at the time. I don't love either of the options that the Lions would have been looking at, which would have been either – Stafford probably staying on the field, maybe on a 4th and 4, or Meyer coming out and attempting a 52-yard field goal, which, you know, he hasn't been great this year from distance, but, you know, 52-yard field goals these days in the NFL seem like, you know, a 42-yard field goal several years ago. So, man, push him back, ask your defense to make one play, maybe two plays. It ended up being one play. As we kind of watched that, I thought, yeah, push him back, get him out of range, and let's see what happens from there.
Now, you mentioned that defensive secondary giving up some big plays. I mean, when I think back to that first meeting with the Buccaneers, who were coming to town this weekend for divisional round game, is how close they were to hitting a couple of big balls. And I'm just curious, what do you remember most from that game? It was kind of a knockdown defensive battle, 20-6 win for the Lions. But like Mike Evans, man, that's a problem.
Yeah, my enduring memory from that game is the block by Craig Reynolds to spring Amon-Ra down the right sideline, just blowing up one of their guys. That's my enduring memory, was seeing that. But look, that was a game where they kept Tampa out of the end zone. They held them to 2 field goals in that game, and I don't think you're going to count on that. And these are really good big play receivers in this game. And much like I felt like going up against the Rams, you were kind of matching their strength, which was Stafford and Nacua and Kupp, this game as well. Now, look, Mayfield is not proven in his career to be Stafford, but when he gets hot, Baker Mayfield can get on a run. And that's what you have to try to avoid. And he's going to get on a run with really good players to throw to and guys that can run after the catch. So that's kind of where my eye goes in this game. Can they get pressure on Mayfield? Can they make him make a mistake? Can they get him on the ground? Can they generate a rush and not have to blitz all the time like we've seen recently? So, I think your eye goes to the vulnerability of this team right now, and that's where it is in that secondary and giving up big plays. Because, look, we've seen what Justin Jefferson did twice. We saw what CeeDee Lamb did. We saw what Puka Nacua did. So now you got Evans and Godwin coming in. So, I mean, this is going to be a real challenge. And, you know, I know probably some people looked at it and they thought, wow, it's Tampa instead of Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia is just broken, and I don't know what's going on. But sometimes teams get on a roll, and Tampa's on a roll right now. They won 6 out of 7. So this is going to be a legit tough test. They got big-time playmakers on defense. So this is going to be a game that they're going to have to go out there and earn, and it's going to be tough on Sunday.
They held Baker to his worst quarterback rating in the first meeting, just 2 third-down conversions, no touchdowns. Baker did have, if you watch back that film, a couple of shots that he just missed on, and the Lions will have to shore up some of that stuff because we've seen it over the last month too, including with Puka last week. My enduring memory from that game, Dan, you know, it's the same play, the Craig Reynolds play with the block on Amon-Ra's touchdown. Let us remember, Craig Reynolds is in that game in the first place because there's no David Montgomery at that point.
Right.
Jahmyr Gibbs is not in uniform. Brian Branch was not in uniform. CeeDee Deuce, CJ Gardner-Johnson was not in uniform. Like, obviously Tampa's won 6 out of 7. They're a different team right now than the ones the Lions saw. But the Lions, who won that game by 14 points, and Goff had his best game of the year, his highest yardage total anyway, the Lions are not the same either. They have, they're certainly better on defense and have a lot of guys back too. And I mean, I think for a playoff team in the divisional round, have pretty good health at this point too.
Yeah, and another week is certainly going to help Laporta. I mean, obviously that's a big deal, getting him in shape. And that was the JMO game, right? Down the right sideline, the long pass to JMO. So that's another memory from that game. And, you know, he's a guy that has come on since then as well. A couple of passes early in the Rams game, then not much after that. But I'm always waiting for him to spring a big play. And I think that's certainly possible here. So, yeah, I think both teams have changed. And I think as the weeks go on, the hope has to be that as Aaron Glenn learns how to deploy these three safeties he's got now, that maybe that can shore up some of the big plays issues that they're having on defense. And you know, look, credit these guys. I mean, they got some holes right now, but they were able to take what was a kind of a scoring fest with 38 points in the first half between the two teams and throttle it down in the second half to hold LA to 2 field goals. And that was huge. And kind of feels like that's the way it's been all year with the Lions, that there's been some bending, but ultimately they don't break. And maybe that's what you need this week. But I'm also encouraged that this is another week in for CeeDee Deuce and another week of him feeling comfortable and another week of everybody understanding their roles, because you've got three guys that can make plays on the ball back there between Kirby and Ifeatu and CeeDee Deuce. So, you know, as time goes on, I just think that bodes well for that secondary to get stronger, because these three players playing together makes them stronger. But it's got to be, because that right now is the issue with this team. Again, good against the run, but it's just those big pass plays and some of these long third down conversions they've given up.
Dan, you're a busy man. We'll get you out of here with this one. I just wanted to get your perspective on what this season and maybe the last two seasons have been like for you. You've been the longtime voice of the Lions. In some ways, you've become one of the faces of the Lions. You do such a good job with what you do. And the Lions have been featuring that more and more with some of these videos. And we pulled some of the audio in this podcast off the video the Lions posted of your best calls from the other night. I was going through some of the comments. Someone's in there saying they would die for you. Not to be dramatic, but I would die for Dan Miller. There was not one, Dan, but two requests for you to officiate weddings. I'm sure you get all that kind of love too in person, but I guess what has this been like for you, just to become such a fixture in this organization and become a real voice, not just for the fans, but of the fans?
Yeah, incredibly humbling. I mean, beyond humbling. There's no words for, you know, when people approach you with that or the appreciation for what you do. And look, I'm living a dream, being able to call NFL games every Sunday. There's 32 people that go to work and do what I do on a Sunday, and that's to be the voice of a team. And it's an honor, and it's a privilege, and it's something that I never take lightly, never take for granted, have no sense of entitlement. It's amazing the people that I get to work with, to be part of the NFL picture and to do it. But man, what has stood out most is just to be able to watch these fans enjoy this over the last 2 years, to enjoy finally getting some payback for all the love that they've given this team, where for decades, all they really got were gut punches. And to be able to see them Saturday night, just enjoy that. But more than that, after any win, like at Ford Field, when I'm leaving and I walk through the atrium there and there's still some fans there, and to see them smiling and celebrating and high-fiving and all that, I've said it a million times, I'll say it a million more. The best part of my job is seeing fans happy. And it's to be able to see that has been unbelievable, because I've had too many years where, you know, you're in a grocery store or a restaurant or a gas station and everybody just wants to tell you what's wrong with the team. And I get it. I'm a lightning rod for it. It's part of my gig and it's fine. But I much prefer when people just say, this is unbelievable. I was crying. I was thinking of my, you know, somebody who's passed, or I called my dad because we shared these things. And I've gotten all those stories over the past couple of days, and it's been absolutely incredible. And that's just the best part. Look, winning is unbelievable. It's fun. But more than anything, it's for these fans to see them. And I'll be honest, there's so many good people in this organization too, from Sheila on down, that are just so easy to root for. And I'm appreciative of what they've done to get things right and to do things the right way. And it's now manifesting itself in victories. These are easy people to root for. Dan Campbell's a great guy. Brad Holmes is a great guy. There's a bunch of great guys in that locker room. So to see them be successful as well is a really cool thing.
I'm not Dan Miller, but I've also gotten emails. I've gotten DMs, one text from people talking about what this meant for their deceased relatives. And that's not an angle I was really anticipating coming out of that game, but like, it makes sense. Like, when you haven't won in 60, whatever years it's been, at that point, you're talking about generations. I mean, you have 60 year old men who don't know what it's like to see their football team win. Like, they've had one win in the playoffs in that time since 57. The generational factor is really, I think, a unique part of the Lions story. Cause I just, you know, it's just been so long and so hard, and to see them break through. And I got sent a DM of someone crying next to a picture of his father on the couch, right next to him, watching the Lions clinch that game. That it's just remarkable stuff that we're seeing.
Kyle, it's one of the things that I think, you know, I grew up in DC, which is a very transient area. And there are a lot of people that are from DC and they've lived there their whole lives. But man, you move here and there's a whole different appreciation for family sharing these experiences, whether it's the Tigers, the Wings, the Pistons, or the Lions. And that you did this with your grandfather and your dad and you, your grandmother, your mom, and you. And it's just, there's just such a sense of what people have done over the years and how all of this, all of our teams are so woven within the fabric of their families. And that's good and bad. And when it becomes good, and it has been bad for so long, it's emotional. And it does make you think of not just the person next to you, but the person that maybe was next to you for so long and isn't there anymore. So it's a really cool thing, which is not just a Michigan thing, but there's a lot of it here. And that's been really awesome to see over the past couple of days. And hopefully there'll be a lot more. I hope to hear people telling me that I dreamed about going to a Super Bowl with my dad, and here we get to go now, which is, you know, would be just amazing. And I know there's a lot of that out there too.
We've all spent so much time trying to contextualize this moment, Dan, and you're the man doing it in real time and doing it as well as anybody. I've really enjoyed listening to you over the years, and this year you've killed it, and in particular on Sunday night. I thought you delivered in the moment, Dan, and a lot of people feel the same way. So thank you for your contributions, and thanks for the chat today. It's been awesome catching up.
Yeah.
Well, it feels only appropriate talking to you guys from M Live to say, as Killer would, you guys are the best. So I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me.